This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Deloitte's 2024 CXO Sustainability Report reveals 92% of executives believe their company can grow while reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Nearly half are transforming their business models to address climate change, and 85% increased sustainability investments in the past year. Results show there is no retreat from sustainability efforts. Instead, signs that climate action is moving to the heart of company strategies. Visit Deloitte.com/CXO report to learn more.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
Hello and welcome and namaste to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Devina Gupta and I'm very excited to join you from India. I've missed you. I've missed the studio in my time away from it. So to make up for it, we've got a packed show for you. Let's dive right in. Two neighbors, yet same story of political chaos unfolding in North America. Just hours away from a government shutdown in the US, lawmakers are locked in tense negotiations. While across the border in Canada, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is battling for his political life. So what's at stake? All of that in a moment. Also, well, that's the sound of celebrations as costly strikes are avoided, where union leaders are calling a deal with German carmaker Volkswagen a Christmas miracle. We all need it, don't we? But let's start from the point which needs it the most, that is the US, which is hours away from a government shutdown unless Congress can agree on a spending plan. The House failed Thursday to pass a new Donald Trump-backed proposal to fund the government into March, and that has led to the threat of a shutdown ahead of the midnight deadline. But the Republicans say they now have an agreement that can be put to vote. Here's House Speaker Mike Johnson updating reporters a short time ago.
We have a unified Republican conference. There is a unanimous agreement in the room that we need to move forward. I will not telegraph to you the specific details of that yet because I've got a couple of things I got to wrap up in a few moments upstairs, but I expect that we will be proceeding forward. We will not have a government shutdown, and we will meet our obligations for our farmers who need aid, for the disaster victims all over the country, and for making sure that military and essential services and everyone who relies upon the federal government for a paycheck is paid over the holidays.
Well, tone of optimism there from Mike Johnson. Watching this closely is Laura Davison, political editor at Bloomberg, joining us now. Laura, what's happening? Just take us up to it. The plan is still under wraps, as I understand, of the deal that could be negotiated. What do you know?
So Republicans have been in negotiations all day long after this bill failed on the floor last night, and really spectacularly. This is basically what Donald Trump and Elon Musk came out and said that they wanted. It almost 40 Republicans bucked Trump and sided with Democrats to defeat that bill. They regrouped this morning in the Capitol, had a bunch of meetings, and they basically have come up with essentially a slimmed down version of that bill. It will have government funding. It will include some aid to farmers, as well as some disaster aid for some recent hurricanes. The House members are set to vote here any minute on the House floor. It's not yet clear if it's going to pass. But if it does, it will then go to the Senate and then go to the Biden's desk for signature. So they're really up against a tough timeline here, really just only, five-ish hours or so away from this shutdown. And there's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen.
Are Republicans united in this? Because 38 of them actually voted against the last plan, which was put to vote on Thursday.
There are a handful of Republicans who have expressed some discontent with this bill, but it looks like the majority of Republicans will go forward. The question is, will some Democrats come and help support this bill? It needs, a broad majority in the House to pass, and that the Democrats are actually meeting right now behind closed doors, discussing amongst themselves on this latest deal to see if this is something they will come out and support, or at least enough of them to get this across the finish line.
Laura, keep an eye on those proceedings and be with us till the time you can, because I know that vote is set to begin any time now. Let's get in Neil Mahoney, who's a professor of economics at Stanford University and a former economic advisor to President Biden. Well, Neil, let me ask you to put on your economist hat first, because just tell us what's at stake here for all of us from different countries and trying to understand what's happening in the world's largest economy.
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, a government shutdown is the economic equivalent of shooting yourself in the foot. That said, I think the effects of a shutdown, at least over the short run, will be mixed. So essential activities for national security and the economy will continue. Non-essential activities will be stopped. Workers won't receive paychecks. So if you're flying to the U.S. and there is a shutdown, you should expect longer lines at airports, but airport personnel will still be there. That being said, if you were planning to go to a national park, a museum, all of those things would be closed.
And what's the economic impact of all of this?
So the economy runs on confidence and predictability, both on the consumer side and on the side of businesses. Trump, of course, prides himself on the art of the deal, on getting things done. And I think, some people are going to be concerned if the first thing out of the blocks that Trump and Musk and Vance have been involved in is taking a bipartisan deal and blowing it up and creating chaos, then what is the signal that we can draw from this over the next 4 years? So, I hope this is just a blip. But I think, some people may start concluding that this is a sign of things to come.
Laura, is there a concern that this plan is mostly also orchestrated by tech billionaire Elon Musk, who was chief campaigner and champion, I would say, for Donald Trump and is now an advisor to the president-elect?
It's not clear how involved Musk was in this specific version of the bill. This has mostly been hashed out by Republicans in the U.S. Capitol. Musk is down in Florida with Trump. But there's a lot of concern from Democrats that what was a deal that had been spent weeks putting together that had bipartisan input on a range of different issues, from disaster aid, farmer aid, investments into children's healthcare research, a whole broad range of things, that a lot of that is getting left on the sidelines and likely won't be revisited. Democrats are going to lose both their Senate majority as well as the White House in just a couple weeks. And so a lot of these priorities are probably not going to be picked up anytime soon.
Time for your political hat, Neil, then, because where's President Biden? He seems to be avoiding public spotlight at the final leg of his presidency with this entire shutdown and chaos at the Capitol Hill.
Look, I think, many of your listeners know the phrase, if you break it, you bought it. If you break it, you own it. And I think, Democrats, including the president, they saw not a perfect deal, but a, reasonable bipartisan deal ripped up. And I think, it is good politics from their standpoint to let Republicans try and mop up the mess.
Well, and also it's not happened for the first time. And hopefully this will be the last time when negotiations will be so tense, because Republicans take the Congress and the Senate in the next round. So thank you so much for joining us. For now, Laura Davison, political editor at Bloomberg, and also Neil Mahoney, professor of economics at Stanford University. We're keeping a close eye on that vote as well. More to come on our sister program, Business Matters, on this. But one thing that you must have noticed in all these conversations about the U.S. government shutdown negotiations is a word that keeps coming up.
So the debt ceiling emerging as a key sticking point in the battle to fund the government.
The U.S. House rejected a Trump-backed plan to fund federal operations and suspend the debt ceiling.
They want a debt ceiling limit to be done away with.
We would push the debt ceiling to January of 2027. Debt ceiling.
Debt ceiling.
Debt ceiling.
The debt ceiling and arguments around it have become a big sticking point in these negotiations. So what is it? What's the impact? What does the term mean? And does it have any relevance to ordinary Americans? I've been asking David Wessel, senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings think tank in Washington. He's literally written the book on the subject.
So the first thing to remember is the United States government collects only 75 cents worth of taxes for every dollar it spends. It borrows the other 25 cents. And over time, this has led to a very large federal debt. The federal debt in the United States, just the federal government, forget about state and local governments, is now $36 trillion. So once upon a time, back before 1917, every time the Treasury wanted to borrow some money, it had to go to Congress and get the congressional approval. But that became unworkable. So Congress changed the law to give the Treasury more flexibility. And it said, you can sell as many bonds as you want, as long as they don't exceed a specific limit. But in recent years, we keep bumping up against that limit. And that has become a political battle, because since everybody agrees that the debt limit has to be raised, if it's not raised, the government can't pay its bills and can't pay interest on the bonds it's already sold. It becomes a must-pass bill, and then people try to pile other stuff on it that because they want to get it approved by Congress and signed by the president.
But how does it impact ordinary Americans and their daily lives?
Well, if Congress behaves and it raises the debt ceiling when it needs to, it won't affect ordinary Americans at all. There are two ways in which it could affect ordinary Americans, though. One is, if Congress is irresponsible and it doesn't raise the debt limit. Remember, this is not approving spending. This is basically saying, we're going to pay the credit card bill on the stuff we already bought. If it didn't do that, we'd probably have a financial crisis. Interest rates would go up. Who knows what the consequences would be to ordinary Americans. But the other and more common thing is that in order to get members of Congress who are a little allergic to raising the debt ceiling to do so, they sometimes, not always, sometimes require that some spending be cut or some taxes be increased. So it can become a lever to reduce federal borrowing by cutting federal benefits or spending or raising taxes.
That was David Wessel, senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings think tank in Washington. And as we speak, the House is voting now on a stopgap funding bill that we've been talking about. But it's going to be a while before we see the eventual results emerge. And with that, you can contact us on WhatsApp or send us a voice note at +44 33 0678 3033. You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Staying in North America and the political crisis in Canada that has deepened. Let's talk about that. The Prime Minister there, Justin Trudeau, could be facing a confidence vote after he reshuffled a third of his cabinet today. It's following the surprise resignation of his Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister earlier this week. Stephanie Levitz is a senior reporter at the Globe and Mail, is joining me now. Stephanie, just break it down for us. What's happening?
Deloitte's 2024 CXO Sustainability Report reveals 92% of executives believe their company can grow while reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Nearly half are transforming their business models to address climate change, and 85% increased sustainability investments in the past year. Results show there is no retreat from sustainability efforts. Instead, signs that climate action is moving to the heart of company strategies. Visit Deloitte.com/CXO report to learn more.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
So the short answer to what's happening is Mr. Trudeau, our prime minister here, is in the fight of his political life. He had his finance minister and deputy prime minister quit in spectacular fashion on Monday, basically raking him over the coals and suggesting he was not a serious, prudent manager of the country's finances. In the wake of all of that, Mr. Trudeau has had to shuffle his front benches for quite some time. He's had a lot of other cabinet ministers say they're not running again. He decided to do that shuffle today. He moved a bunch of people around. Maybe a last-ditched effort at some kind of front-bench unity for this government. And into all of that, the opposition New Democrats, who effectively have been acting as a dance partner for the Liberal government, the minority Liberals propping them up in all sorts of confidence votes, have finally announced that they will no longer vote to support the Liberal government under any circumstances, something they have previously refused to say they would do. So now what that means is the minority Liberals have no obvious other party in our House of Commons to keep them in power, making it even more likely that Mr. Trudeau Liberal government will fall far sooner than the next scheduled election, which was October of 2025.
Well, talking about this plan to introduce a motion of no confidence when Parliament reconvenes, can they actually make him resign? Aren't Canada's rules a little different that Justin Trudeau can choose to stay and ignore his party?
No. So in our parliament, in the way our parliamentary rules are here, roughly once a quarter, more or less, the opposition parties have an opportunity to control the agenda in the House of Commons. And they get what's known as an opposition day. And on that opposition day, they can introduce whatever business they like to be debated and voted upon in parliament. So what the leader of the New Democrats said today is that they would seek on the next available opposition day that belongs to them, they would seek to introduce and pass a motion of non-confidence in the prime minister. Should all of the opposition parties vote in favor of that motion, then the House is considered to have fallen, the House has lost confidence in the government, and Canadians are on the road to an election.
Now, all this is all because of Donald Trump's threats to impose tariffs on imports from Canada, which seems to have sparked off this move against Trudeau.
Yeah, so it's linked to this notion that, a serious demand among Canadian business, economists, all sorts of different people, that the Canadian government really ought to be fixated on one thing and one thing only right now, which is preventing catastrophic economic damage should Donald Trump move ahead with a promise to impose 25% tariffs on our country. And that's a promise that he made, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now. And what happened as a result was we had the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, sort of really changing her tune inside government and telling the prime minister, listen, whatever else you think you might want to spend money on right now, affordability, getting voters who are worried about the financial status quo to calm down, really our focus needs to be Donald Trump. And her perception that the prime minister was sort of more interested in his domestic political survival than staving off a catastrophe for the Canadian economy.
Briefly, then, what does it mean for businesses there?
I mean, there's a business I saw today, a small business that said, in the scale of tariffs, if Donald Trump were to impose those 25% tariffs, it would end their businesses. Like, that would be the end of it. That our economies are so tightly intertwined that small businesses across the country would suffer, Canadians would suffer, the cost of living would rise again. All of the efforts by government, the Bank of Canada, to deal with inflation, it'd be all tossed out the window with tariffs at that kind of rate.
Stephanie Levitz, thank you so much for joining us, senior reporter at The Globe and Mail. Now, on World Business Report, we've been keeping a close eye on the wave of labor action sweeping across the US. From Amazon to Starbucks, workers are demanding better pay and working conditions. But across the Atlantic, a different story unfolds. German automaker Volkswagen was on the brink of a major strike, with tens of thousands of its staff gathering and threatening to walk out over plans to restructure, cut jobs and close factories. But after 70 hours of intense negotiations, a breakthrough has been made. The company's bosses and union leaders have struck a deal avoiding site closures. Here's Alexander Demling, auto correspondent of Der Spiegel, with more details.
Yeah, I mean, the main problem for Volkswagen is that they've been very successful in China for many years, and they sold 40% of their cars there. And in the last few years, the Chinese auto industry has become a formidable competitor for them, especially in electric cars. And since electric cars are taking off in China, Volkswagen just has a lot of trouble making the same profits that they used to, and that brings the problems to Germany, because they've been subsidizing their German business for a long time with these profits from China, and that doesn't work anymore.
Is this going to be enough, then, do you think, for a turnaround and to deal with challenges that you spoke about earlier for the company?
That's very hard to say at this point. I'm skeptical, because the competition is just going to get harder and harder. I mean, BYD, the Chinese company that is the biggest producer of electric cars, they're going to start producing electric cars in Europe very soon. And basically, that was the backdrop for this whole program at VW, get competitive with BYD and with Tesla. And I'm skeptical that they will go all the way with this program.
So do you think the union members will stick to the deal in the coming days as it gets tougher for the company to compete, especially in the European market?
I mean, what management always said during these negotiations was, we want to have a deal where we don't have to do the same thing in 1 or 2 years again. Like, we want to come out of this crisis mode. And I'm not sure that that's going to happen. I mean, everyone hopes that, of course, but it's very possible that in 1 or 2 years that they're going to look at it again and just say, we didn't do enough now.
How is it playing politically? Because right now, Germany is going through an uncertain time. There are snap elections that have been announced in February. Chancellor Olaf Scholz is looking for re-election and slowing down of the economy.
Exactly. So the Social Democrats, the party of Olaf Scholz, they've been campaigning very hard for Volkswagen not to cut too many jobs, not to close down factories. And especially because one of his party members, the governor of Lower Saxony, is on the board of Volkswagen and is a huge shareholder. So he fought for that. Social Democrats, the governing party, they can be pretty happy, because not a lot of people are going to lose their jobs against their will.
Is this also emblematic of the problem that ails Europe's largest economy?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Volkswagen is a big symbol for that, because the whole German export model, producing industrial goods in Germany, exporting it all over the world, that has become a very problematic model, because the world is shutting down. China has been subsidizing high German wages at Volkswagen. That you can go through the whole industry and you'll find that pattern again and again.
Alexander Demling, auto correspondent at Der Spiegel. Now let's head to New York, where Chris Lowe, chief economist at FHN Financial, is joining us, a regular voice on the program. Chris, thanks for being with us. Seems like China is giving tough competition to Volkswagen. Does it have impact on other automakers around the world as well?
Davina, absolutely it does. And look, a big part of this is when China was in the midst of their housing bubble and people were making enormous fortunes building homes, and China moved away from manufacturing, away from exports, and it gave other manufacturers breathing room. But that bubble burst during the pandemic. China has poured a lot of money back into manufacturing capacity, and it's created a real problem for automakers in the U.S., in Japan, and in Europe trying to compete.
Well, and closer home, we're also getting this news on Reuters as we speak. President Joe Biden supports a stopgap funding bill right now, which has been introduced. How are businesses and investors seeing this kind of negotiation that seems to be coming up time and again?
It's extraordinarily frustrating because it does create volatility in interest rates. Interest rates right now are very close to the highest they've been all year, despite the fact our central bank is cutting short-term rates. And it also puts borrowing plans on hold because no one wants to invest in an economy when there's a significant chance the whole thing could be put on hold for months at a time. So it's a quick resolution and one that lasts for a while. A debt ceiling limit that goes up for months, not for weeks, would be a huge relief.
Well, as I said, Christmas miracles could happen, but this one, at least, is in the hands of the U.S. lawmakers. Positive signs where President Biden is saying he's backing this stopgap funding bill. Thank you so much for joining us, Chris Lowe, Chief Economist at FHN Financial. Now, with just a few days to go until Christmas, many of us will have trees up in Europe. 80 million are sold each year. Can you believe it? And the industry is worth $1.6 billion. Our reporter, Linda Walker, has been looking at what's going into growing them.
It's been harvest time in recent weeks for European Christmas tree growers. From planting to selling, it can take up to 10 years.
They're 3 years old when we plant them. If everything goes well, we start harvesting at year seven.
This is Oliver Coombe. He has 75 acres of trees growing on his 255-acre farm just outside the city of York in the UK. A lot can happen during the growing period, from the impact of climate change to geopolitical issues like Brexit affecting labour costs.
It's been difficult to make money, particularly for the large wholesale growers. If they're not making any money growing the product, they have two choices: they stop or grow less. And so a lot of them have been rescaling their businesses to a level that they can manage with available labour, works with existing costs, and that they're happy that they can sell. Off the top of my head, I would say our labour costs increased by over 50% since 1998. Now, we have to push that through, and it comes through on the tree prices.
The average price for a real tree varies across Europe. In the UK, it's between $30 and $80 for a 6-foot or 1.8-metre fir tree. What you'll pay varies hugely depending on where you live, but research from Hortweek suggests that across Europe, Christmas tree prices have increased by around 10% this year. Klaus Christensen runs the Danish Christmas Tree Association, which holds the presidency for the European Association.
Germany is the biggest producer in Europe, followed by Denmark, then UK. Christmas trees kind of cyclic. And we could say 2020, that was the bottom where the prices hit recent low. So now it's beginning to be better times for the Christmas tree growers than it has been for the last 5 years.
While growers face inflationary pressures, such as the impact of the war in Ukraine on fertilizer prices, Klaus explains that the balance between supply and demand still has the biggest impact on price.
When there are good prices, many growers or farmers think this could be a good business. They go into the business, and then it tends then 10 years later we have too many trees.
BBC's Linda Walker there, and I cannot resist this but ask you, Chris, have you bought your Christmas tree yet?
We have our tree up. It's beautiful. And we have children coming to stay with us for Christmas, so we're really looking forward to it.
A fresh one or a fake one?
Well, I have to admit it's a fake one. But, you know, it's ecological
we'll leave
choice
it there.
In New York.
All right. Thank you for joining us on World Business Report.
Deloitte's 2024 CXO Sustainability Report reveals 92% of executives believe their company can grow while reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Nearly half are transforming their business models to address climate change, and 85% increased sustainability investments in the past year. Results show there is no retreat from sustainability efforts.
Instead, signs that climate action is moving to the heart of company strategies. Visit Deloitte.com/CXO report to learn more.